Hey everyone, welcome back to another thrilling episode of AI Unchained. It's your tech enthusiast Jack and Core here, ready to dive into the latest in AI, Web 3.0, and much more. Fasten your seatbelts because today's topics are going to be electrifying.
Absolutely, Jack. We've got a jam-packed show lined up for you today, folks. From the newest advancements in artificial intelligence to the most disruptive moves in the blockchain space, there's no shortage of hot topics to cover.
And if you think that's all, think again. We're also going to touch on some of the biggest business and political moves making headlines. Get your coffee ready, because this episode is going to be as intense as a double shot espresso.
You might want to make it a triple, Jack. We'll be debating the controversial AI regulatory proposals that have been stirring up quite a storm lately. Can regulation keep up with the rapid pace of AI innovation?
Core, you know, that's my favorite subject to argue about. Spoiler alert, my answer is no. Regulations tend to be slower than my grandma's cooking. But hey, I'm all ears to hear your side, and maybe, just maybe, you'll change my mind today.
Ha, challenge accepted, Jack. But let's not forget to also have a little fun. Did you hear about the latest Silicon Valley gossip, Jack? Apparently, a certain tech CEO had a bit of a meltdown at their company retreat. That's some drama we'll definitely dive into.
Oh boy, tech CEOs having meltdowns at retreats. Classic. That'll be entertaining for sure. But before we delve into all that chaos, let's make sure we welcome our newcomers.
Definitely. If this is your first time tuning in, welcome to the party. And for our loyal listeners, welcome back. Whether you're commuting to work, hitting the gym, or just lounging at home, we're thrilled to have you with us.
All right, folks, grab your headphones and let's unchain today's topics. Ready, Core?
Let's do it, Jack.
On that note, let's kick things off with our first hot topic of the day. So, Core, we've been talking a lot about the basics of smart contracts on Ethereum and how they're changing the game for decentralized applications. But there's this aspect of security that just blows my mind. These contracts are executed by every single validating node on the network without the operators getting a chance to look them over first. Isn't that a bit risky?
Absolutely, Jack. It's like someone handing you a sealed box and asking you to let it run wild in your home. The good thing here is that Ethereum's design cleverly mitigates this risk. By running these contracts inside a virtual machine, VM, the Ethereum Virtual Machine, EVM, to be exact, it limits what the contract can do. No access to your network, your disks, or even the file system. It's like putting the box inside a bigger box that restricts its movements.
Exactly. That sandboxing is key. But what really strikes me is how Ethereum's use of VMs makes these smart contracts so portable. You can run a node on all sorts of different hardware and operating systems. So whether you're on a Mac, a PC, or even some Linux system, your contract just works. That's a huge leap in getting decentralized tech more widespread.
Oh, definitely. It's like writing a program in Java and having that trusty JVM, Java Virtual Machine, run your code anywhere. This portability really brings the whole decentralized ecosystem together. Imagine the chaos if every dApp, decentralized application, had to be rewritten for different systems. We'd still be stuck in the stone age of crypto tech.
Yeah, for real. Another thing that's funny yet important is the names they use, like signature values. It gives off this false sense of simplicity, like signing a piece of paper. But in reality, these signatures are all about cryptographic proofs, and there can be multiple valid ones for the same message.
Right. It's a bit deceiving. These names give non-technical folks the impression they understand it on face value, but underneath, it's super complex. Imagine thinking you're just signing a document, but actually, you're confirming ownership and intent through intricate cryptographic algorithms. The subtleties can be mind-boggling.
We should totally emphasize how smart contracts enable so many practical applications, especially in how they enforce rules automatically when certain conditions are met. But do you think the inherent complexities and security measures could slow down adoption?
Somewhat, yes. The tech-savvy will embrace it, but mainstream users might shy away unless there's a simpler interface or more user-friendly designs. We need projects like MetaMask or the rising tide of no-code platforms to bridge that gap.
And hey, speaking of mainstream adoption, these concepts weren't just confined to Ethereum. They're also influencing regulations and the development of crypto ETFs. Seeing the legitimacy that Bitcoin ETFs brought to Wall Street, I can see Ethereum following suit as its smart contract functionality becomes even more significant.
Oh, and those Bitcoin ETFs have their own stories. Remember how they surged past expectations and basically doubled Bitcoin's price by the end of the year? These ETFs simplify things for traditional investors who don't want to manage private keys. That convenience is a game changer.
True. I mean, the idea of trading Bitcoin without holding it, for the everyday investor, it takes away the nightmares of security and self-custody. Now, imagine the same model, but for Ethereum. The potential applications and industries that could tap into Ethereum-based ETFs, mind-boggling.
And yet, Jack, the narrative for Bitcoin versus Ethereum remains distinct. Bitcoin's store of value idea is pretty clear-cut, while Ethereum's story as a smart contract platform is still unfolding. How do we get people to understand that Ethereum's utility goes beyond being just another cryptocurrency?
Education, for sure. Podcasts like ours, perhaps. But seriously, use cases that show tangible benefits in everyday life, like decentralized finance, DeFi, platforms, NFTs, or even blockchain-based identities. These are what will draw in the laypersons.
Exactly. When people can see and experience the technology's benefits firsthand, maybe even interact with it in games or everyday applications, that's when the fog will lift. The human element in tech adoption can't be underestimated.
Absolutely. And continued innovation like the secure execution of smart contracts needs to keep evolving. It's a fascinating dance between staying secure and becoming more user-friendly. We're on the brink of something huge.
Amen to that, Jack. The future is decentralized, and we're just getting started. Considering the momentum, it's exciting to think where we'll be in just a few short years.
Gore, with all these new features, it feels like we're in some kind of sci-fi novel. I mean, trainable mouse gestures, an input typer helper. It's like our computers are going fully sentient.
Absolutely, Jack. Get now customize every single button on devices like the Stream Deck to show a cute little 120 by 120 color image. It's like we've turned our entire workspace into a dynamic digital canvas. It used to be a dream for content creators and streamers, but now everyone can get a slice of the pie.
And DeckSurf, finally an alternative to the clunky Stream Deck software. Finally, some serious competition in the customization space. But let's not kid ourselves here. It's also tech overload.
Spoken like a true minimalist, Jack. But honestly, we've come a long way from basic keyboards and mice. These advancements like DeckSurf give us so much control. It's like having a remote for your entire digital life.
Right. And it's not just about the tech savvy. Think about the on-screen keyboard and dictionary completion features. These can help everyone type more accurately and efficiently, especially on devices without physical keyboards.
True. And let's not overlook the stereoscopic support for AR glasses like Surreal Air. Remember when AR was just a cool concept from movies? Now we can have fully interactive augmented reality right at our fingertips with actual productivity benefits.
Yeah, and with Looking Glass making lenticular and tilt 5 AR tech a reality, it's not just sci-fi anymore. Imagine collaborating on projects or even just watching content in a new dimension. It almost makes me wish I was a kid again growing up with all this.
Speaking of growing up, the book about Gondwanaland you mentioned earlier, it sounds fascinating. It's aimed at young readers, but it's bridging modern history and mythical times. It's like giving kids an adventure that educates them without losing their interest.
Stories like that have a special kind of magic, where kids can learn about history and cultures through compelling narratives. Nothing beats falling through a time crack to another era. But hey, back to our digital cracks and wonders. OpenAI wants to be the Visa of AI. What are your thoughts?
The comparison is spot on. Visa's locked-in network model reshaped payments, and OpenAI is trying something similar with AI, creating barriers for competitors through legal and strategic moves. The exclusivity deals government contracts. It's a strategic masterstroke.
Until the tech gets commoditized, like payment processing did, then what? OpenAI's reliance on LLMs will mean cheaper, more available options for everyone. Sam Altman warned about this. Shockingly capable models used for everything. It's fascinating, but risky.
If they don't pivot smartly, someone else will slip through the cracks. Musk lurking as Altman's rival, and let's not forget Google, Meta, Amazon, they are twiddling their thumbs. It's a crowded race with high stakes, like a survival of the boldest and craftiest.
Bold indeed. Reminds me of Ocular AI prepping for their generative and computer vision models. The back-end engineer role focusing on deploying and fine-tuning AI models. It's proof everyone's in on the data game, turning raw data into golden opportunities.
And they're drawing talent from everywhere. Look at the AI brain drain to startups and newer companies. Xiaomi set up with a growing AI team and massive GPU clusters. They're really gearing up to make waves in AI too.
It's a global AI arms race. Every company, from Tesla's big megapack ambitions to JD Logistics' automated warehouses, is pushing the AI spectrum boundaries. The evolutions are dizzying.
Tesla's speed in getting their Shanghai battery plant up and running is nuts. And JD's automated warehouse tech doubling operational efficiency, these are game changers. We're witnessing these companies revolutionize their fields in real time.
And amidst this, ChatGPT's search function getting duped by hidden text on websites makes you wonder about the vulnerabilities, though. It's like opening Pandora's box with these powerful tools.
That incident was a wake-up call. It's a reminder that even cutting-edge tech has its flaws, opening it to abuse. Google's experience with such challenges shows robustness, but it's a cat-and-mouse game.
As these bugs get ironed out, models like DeepSeek coming in hot with cheaper, efficient training, they're setting a new standard. If their benchmarks hold, big names are on notice.
The innovation cycle is incredible. But back to your point about vulnerabilities, it highlights the need for rigorous testing and ethical considerations in deploying these large language models. The competition must push each other to create safer, more robust AI.
Agreed. Whether it's the new AI advances, marine carbon removal tech, or novel storytelling, each piece shows the rapid evolution and diverse application of technology today. Keeps us on our toes for sure.
No doubt, our digital and physical worlds are blending at an incredible pace, and we're just scratching the surface. We may soon find ourselves living in the future we once only dreamed about.
And as long as our sci-fi dreams continue keeping us entertained and inspired, I'd say we're in for quite the ride. So let's buckle up and enjoy this journey. All right, Core, I think it's time we dive deeper into the nitty-gritty mechanics of the LC3 we've been chatting about. Let's break it down for our listeners who might be getting lost in the technicalities. So, the LC3's memory has 65,536 locations, each 16 bits wide. Can you talk about why every instruction is 16 bits?
Absolutely, Jack. The 16-bit width essentially means that each instruction in LC3 fits neatly into a 16-bits packet. Think of it as each instruction being like a word in a book, and each word takes up exactly the same amount of space, 16 bits. This consistency simplifies the design of the processor because it knows exactly how much data to fetch for each instruction.
So consistency makes everything more predictable, right?
Exactly. However, you brought up an interesting point that each line in the instruction set seems like it has a different number of characters. That might confuse folks since we just said every instruction is 16 bits. The key here is to understand the distinction between the actual binary encoded instructions and the human readable representations, which vary in length.
It's like when you look at printf and see the actual compiled machine code is very different from the human readable source code. Speaking of which, can we talk about trap routines? They're like predefined shortcuts that make the LC3 interact with things like the keyboard. Am I right?
Yep, you got it. Trap routines are essentially the LC3's way of handling input and output. Imagine you want your program to read something from the keyboard. Instead of manually writing all the instructions to handle the input process, you call a trap routine with a specific trap code. This trap code tells the LC3 which predefined routine to execute. Think of it as dialing a short number on your phone to directly call a service.
That's pretty neat, actually. Like speed dialing for your computer processes. What's even more interesting is how smartly designed these utility functions are because they save so much coding effort. If I'm working on LC3, I don't need to reinvent the wheel every time I need to get user input or print something out.
Exactly. One of my favorite things about trap routines is that they really optimize code efficiency. And speaking of optimization, we should touch on how LC3 updates condition flags. This one's a bit more nuanced, but crucial for understanding program flow.
Yeah, updating condition flags sounds like it's something you'd learn in a more advanced course. Lay it down for us, Core. Why are these flags so important?
Well, condition flags in LC3 are used to indicate the outcome of arithmetic operations. Every time you write a value to a register, the condition flags are updated to reflect whether the value is positive, negative, or zero. It's kind of like setting a marker in your code, so further instructions know what just happened.
So, if I perform an addition and the result is zero, the Z flag gets set?
Exactly. And it simplifies decision-making in your program. Rather than coding elaborate checks, you just look at these flags and decide the next steps. This kind of internal status checking streamlines everything.
Clever little flags doing the heavy lifting behind the scenes. Now, shifting gears a bit, let's apply this to something we all use daily, Bluetooth security keys. You mentioned how security keys used Bluetooth low energy before NFC became the norm. How did they manage the power issue back then?
Good point, Jack. Bluetooth low energy, BLE, was a workaround to make security keys usable with iPhones before they supported NFC. These keys had their own power sources, usually in the form of small batteries, to maintain connectivity. It was a bit of a hassle, but necessary at the time.
And now NFC has pretty much simplified all of that, right?
Yeah, NFC made everything simpler by eliminating the need for separate power sources and making the whole interaction more seamless. But it's key to remember how those early challenges led to the much smoother experience we have today. Innovation builds on solving real-world limitations.
Wow, just goes to show how far we've come and how intertwined these tech advancements are. Whether it's something as small as a condition flag or as large as a new communication protocol, the progress is all interconnected.
Absolutely, Jack. Everything in tech is a layer built upon another layer. That's why understanding the basics like the LC3's functions or Bluetooth's early limitations helps us appreciate the sophisticated systems we now take for granted.
Couldn't have said it better myself. This is definitely a fascinating journey into the microcosms of tech.
And we're just getting started.
So Core, let's talk about this authentication issue. The thing that struck me is how we've ended up relying so heavily on our computers for authentication, right? It's like giving the keys to the car to someone who might just hijack it with a click.
Absolutely, Jack. And it's scary because we're just scratching the surface of the problem. Think about how Android handles app permissions using that assetlinks.json file. On paper, it's a robust way to link domains to their corresponding apps. But the moment an attacker hijacks the computer, all of that goes out the window.
Exactly. It's like building a fortress and leaving the front gate open. What's worse is that the attacker essentially becomes you once they control your computer. The authentication process becomes pointless.
The analogy with Visa back in 1958 kind of fits here too. They had to build a whole network to prevent fraud, but their initial protection measures were pretty much obsolete and laughed at by today's standards. It's a perpetual game of catch-up.
When you think about it, Visa tackled an early version of what we face now, building trust where there's potential for massive fraud. So now, we're looking at Android and their search checks. Ingenious. But again, if your device is compromised, it's game over.
And speaking of Visa, the Justice Department suing them for anti-competitive tactics highlights the irony. Both Visa and Android solutions are born from trying to monopolize security, but they still have huge gaps, especially if a key element, the computer or the authentication system, is compromised.
It makes me wonder, does better authentication fundamentally solve anything if the very tools we use to authenticate are themselves vulnerable? If someone has your computer, it's as good as having your bank account.
Right. And that brings us to another tech issue, parameter count in AI models. It's not directly related, but there's an interesting parallel in terms of needing beefier hardware for advanced models. We need beefier security measures for digital authentication.
Totally. Speaking of which, can we talk about poor old Fisker? I mean, just look at the timeline of that car company's demise. Lax internal procedures, lost payments, it's almost a masterclass in what not to do with your business, especially one relying so heavily on digital transactions.
It's quite the tragic comedy. They lost millions in customer payments, couldn't even keep track of deliveries, and then expect to stay afloat? They definitely didn't learn from the Visa playbook. Secure your network robustly.
And then there's the added pain of recalling vehicles and attempting to bill customers for labor costs. This was a cautionary tale about why strengthening your infrastructure end-to-end matters, from employee procedures to customer interactions.
Fisker's bankruptcy highlights that fundamental gaps in your system can be fatal, and it stresses why Visa's network evolution was crucial, creating that trust. It's something we still struggle with today in every layer of our digital landscape.
It's ironic that the same issues of trust, authentication, and infrastructure that plagued businesses in the past continue to be the Achilles heel in our digital age. Whether it's a security breach via malware or companies mishandling data, there's always a weak link.
Speaking of which, the whole Snowflake situation with stolen logins from malware-ridden computers reveals the stark reality. Even with multi-factor authentication, if the computer itself is compromised, all layers beneath fall apart.
Yeah, the problem is that security isn't just about locked doors anymore. It's about maintaining a fortress where even the individual bricks can't be tampered with. And when you have lapses like Snowflake or MoneyGram's breaches, it shows how far we still have to go.
Exactly. The attack surface is widened, and our traditional methods of creating security perimeters are no longer sufficient. It's about orchestrating a symphony of security measures that accounts for each potential vulnerability.
And bringing it full circle, doesn't that make you appreciate why advancements in AI and tech are a double-edged sword? More parameters, more power, but also more points to secure. It's a constant balancing act.
Well said, Jack. As we build these giant fortresses with new tech and AI, we need to ensure the bricks and the mortar are just as fortified. Better authentication methods are only a piece of this ever-evolving puzzle.
Indeed, it's a never-ending battle. Here's hoping our listeners continue to circle back to these fundamentals as they innovate, or we'll keep seeing these cycles of breaches and bankruptcies.
Here's to hoping, Jack. Until then, we just keep pushing the envelope and hoping our digital castles don't crumble.
What a great session today, Core. We covered some exciting ground from the latest breakthroughs in AI to the intricate dance happening in tech and business. There was a lot to unpack.
Absolutely, Jack. It's always a wild ride. I mean, who knew we'd end up debating the implications of quantum computing on enterprise solutions? And let's not forget about the heated discussion on data privacy legislation. If we had more time, I'm sure we could have dissected every policy proposal out there.
Definitely. We might have to dedicate a whole episode to just that. But seriously, the conversation about the rapid pace of AI advancements and their real-world impacts was eye-opening. It's clear we're standing at the precipice of some serious change.
And we didn't even scratch the surface of AI in health tech. I was about to dive into that new diagnostic algorithm when we ran out of time. Maybe next episode?
For sure. But let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. I think today's session gave our listeners a lot to chew on. Speaking of which, let's address our audience directly.
Yes, let's. Thank you for joining us today on AI Unchained. We hope you enjoyed our discussions and gained some valuable insights.
It's always a pleasure having you with us. Your support and engagement are what make this all worthwhile. Got any last thoughts for our listeners? C-O-R-R?
Just a reminder to stay curious and keep questioning the world around you. Technology is evolving faster than ever, and there's always something new to learn and debate about.
Absolutely. And to our listeners, remember, if you have any topics you want us to cover or questions for us, feel free to reach out. We love hearing from you.
Catch you next time, folks. Stay unchained.
See you next time on AI Unchained.